When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 511. Got a special guest, a first-time guest joining me on the show. He's a really, really, really good fantasy baseball player, a great friend of the show. You probably heard his Twitter handle mentioned on questions many a time, which I truly appreciate. And you can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tidd, how we doing, my friend?
Hey, Bubba, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk with you.
Yeah, I can't wait. For those that live under a rock and don't listen to the Rob DiPietro Deadpool Hitter podcast, Ben was on a couple weeks ago, and that was great to hear him on that show. And regular listeners of the show, like I said, Ben's been awesome between Toby and my show and Ryan and my show and just other shows I've had. He's a great listener question person, which is great because we say it a lot that like I'd rather do a full show of listener questions. So I love when people drop questions because that's the whole point of the show. So thanks for that. But we're going to recap your season. We're going to do some just fun 2023 player debates because, you know, we'll only talk about these guys a million times by next season. But it'll be fun to kind of dip our toes in those waters. But as we sit here on Tuesday, October 4th, it's 1 o'clock. Some doubleheaders are playing right now. 1 o'clock my time, 4 o'clock your time. Some doubleheaders are playing. How are we looking in your overalls?
So pulling up right now. So I started out the week, I think, in fourth or third, and then I went down to seventh, and right now I'm at sixth in the overall for the main event.
It's crazy. It's I don't want to make people sound. I hate sounding like this, but. Like there's a lot of people that I know in like the top 10 this year, top 20 this year, which is awesome because there's been years past where it's like all these like quote unquote elite NFBC players that have been doing it forever. And you don't really know a lot of the names this year. It's like Genstead and you're up there and Weimer and Slack and all these guys we know are up there doing their thing, which is great to see. But I'll be honest. And if Scott's listening to the show, I apologize, but Scott's a good friend, but there's been moments after recording with Toby and after recording with Ryan in recent weeks where we're all like, we're pulling for Ben. So that's like, that's really what it was. Cause I, the way we look at it, it's like, these guys have been playing forever. You are new to the game, kind of like in respect well, to NFL, their, and compared to what they've been doing NFBC wise. So let's take a step back. Again, if people listen to Deadpool Hitter podcast, you probably heard a lot of this, but we're going to rehash it here. When did you start playing fantasy baseball? We'll get to NFBC soon, but when did you start playing fantasy baseball and find out you kind of enjoyed it the way you do now?
So if someone already heard this, I'm sorry, but I started out in Yahoo, and I believe my first draft or the first year I played was 2006. So it's actually been a while now. It's like over half my life I've been playing fantasy baseball. Awesome. Yeah, so I was I think that was my freshman year of high school I started playing. So I've been playing Yahoo. I still play Yahoo, but that's when I started way back then. So
nice. Have you always played Roto? Like what's the format you started with and what do you prefer now? Cause obviously in NFBC you're playing Roto, but, what did you start with? What do you prefer?
Well back in the early days it was head to head categories. So it's kind of like Roto. But, I forget when I wanted to try out Roto cause for a while I was doing head to head and then, Once I learned how to play, I can remember like my first year, I didn't really know how the scoring worked. I was just giving it a go. But then once I figured it out, I prefer it so much more now. And I've never played points for baseball. I've done that in basketball, but football too. But yeah, Roto is definitely the one that I prefer the most. My home league still had head-to-head categories. That's on Yahoo. But that's it.
Yeah, head-to-head, it's just one of those things. Like, everyone's kind of – it feels like most start out there because, you know, we all play fantasy football first. And that's kind of where you go because it's your familiar territory. But for me, it's Roto, like, for baseball. Like, I love the Roto format. I get it. You could be dead in the waters after, like, 4 months or something. But, hey, I hate the fact of head-to-head and you had the playoffs and all of a sudden you had the best season and you get screwed because you had one bad week. That's a tough one to stomach at times. You mentioned basketball and football. Do you play a lot of basketball and football still, or are you primarily baseball?
I still play them both, but definitely baseball is the one I play in the most leagues. I do, like, 2-2 for basketball and football. So I spend most of my time on baseball.
Are you playing on the NFFC formats for that too, or does that still Yahoo?
Yeah, still Yahoo. Yeah. This NFBC for now.
Good. Gotcha. You mentioned you only have like two leagues basketball, two leagues football. How many leagues do you have this year for baseball? And it doesn't have to be just NFBC, just all around.
Yeah, it's actually the most I've ever played, and it was eight.
Eight.
So
see,
not too many compared to others. You make me feel a lot for me.
Yeah, you make me feel bad because like I'm sitting there. I do so many. Like I like to do a bunch of like, you know, NFBC 50s because I like 12 team leagues, or I'll do some DCs to kind of practice stuff. Like I know, I think you did a few too, and some other guys will. And I'm sitting there like, when you're drafting them, you think no big deal. They're just drafting holds, set them, you know, twice a week, no biggie. But it's like every week, it's just like, I'm not putting the full attention, I don't think, into these. So I'm starting to debate, do I need to cut back even on those? Because, like, I use those for kind of practice for the real thing. It's like, is that even worth it after a while? So that'll be interesting. When you did your NFBC stuff this year, what kind of NFBC leagues are you looking at?
So I started out with two DCs. And then last year, I actually won a TGFBI satellite. So that was my third league that I drafted. So I'm in TGFBI this year.
Nice.
And then my plan was to do five. My fourth one was going to be an Emmy qualifier. I've done those this year and the previous two seasons. And then it wasn't really filling up as my main event draft approach. So I'm like, well, I want to get at least one live draft in. So I ended up doing a satellite, but the qualifier still filled. So then I did the 150 satellite and then a Emmy qualifier before the main.
And you just have one main, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. I love it. That's another reason why we're rooting for you, because a lot of these guys have multiple entries into stuff, and it's like, nope, I have the single bullet, and we're to make this work. So, like, I love that even more too. We'll take a couple steps back. When did you start playing NFC? Was it 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Yeah, it was 2020. I did during the shortened season.
Gotcha. And what have you learned through there? Because, like, it's a gigantic learning curve. I really started about 3 or 4 years ago too on the NFBC. You know, when you do what I do, everyone uses it for references, and it's a great tool. Like, it is an amazing format and everything, but I never really got into it. Now I do it, and each year you learn something new. It's ridiculous. The talent, just the fabbing, just everything. It's just ruthless and sometimes. But what have you learned from the beginning till now that's made you the player you are?
I think look at the big picture a lot, because in 12 teamers, especially on Yahoo, it's like 23 man rosters as opposed to 30 on NFBC. So the player pool is a lot smaller on Yahoo. So like you can kind of make a lot more mistakes, and then there's still a lot of guys you can add in free agency. But I kind of took it for granted because I won my league in 2020. It was an ME qualifier. Mm-hmm. So I went into last year like, I don't know. I definitely prepped for it, but I didn't do well at all last year in the leagues I played in. I don't think I cashed in anything. Well, except for the satellite, of course, but that was a satellite league. But figuring out like the importance of certain like positions, like starting pitching, you know, I remember one year my main event last year, I had Kyle Hendricks as my SP2. So that didn't really go too well. It's just completely different. The 12 to 15. And like, I know you tend to stick to the 12, and I try to stick to the 15 now because it's just I go back and forth, but not on NFBC. I don't know, with Yahoo it's like a completely different game almost, so I'm kind of able to keep the two separate. It's definitely made it easier, I feel like, for the 12 teamers, because I can kind of like take a breath, because it's like a 3-hour draft. And then also too, when I first did my first 15 teamer, I remember I was my last pick was Zach Plesac. So it was the year he had his best season. So I'm like, I remember when I picked him, I'm like, I can't believe I'm picking Zach Plesac right now in a fantasy draft. It was the 30th round of a 15 teamer. So just getting the knowing the player pool better. Like I knew most, I'm always following MLB. So I know a lot of the players, but not to a level where you really need to know for a 15 team league.
Yeah, no, and I love that because that's one reason like we do DCs is learn the player pool. Like mm-hmm. you do the 15s or the 12s, whatever you prefer, you're drafting 50 rounds. So you're definitely like you're going 20 rounds deeper than any other draft you're doing. So you're learning that pool, which is tremendous. And then I love how this is how like crazy we are with our game we like to play. You remember you picked Zach Plesac in your last pick. Like we remember little things like that, just like weird idiosyncrasies or whatever you want to call them that like we remember these things. So it's pretty funny and cool that you remember that. And the difference between Yahoo and NFBC is tremendous. You're right. Cause one thing I learned this year, cause I was doing content for Fantasy Pros, which uses Yahoo ownership percentages, which I usually just write about NFBC ownership percentages. My goodness, the differences in those two leagues. Like I would tweet out stuff once in a while, like how is this guy like 12% rostered? It's like ridiculous. Yeah. What's going on in this league? I get it. I understand it's more casual, different formats, all this stuff. I get it, but I'm still just like, it's hard to wrap your head around. So like you said, it's a different animal. You can kind of breathe at times, do things a little differently. maybe not focus as much because it's just all there type thing.
Right.
So I get you 100% there. And I like what you mentioned with the NFBCs. Like I like the 12s. You like the 15s. Toby likes the 15s. What I would say is just pick one. It is, like you said, so difficult to go back and forth in the NFBC format. Cause for one, the waiver wires are just bananas, absolutely bananas in a 12 compared to at least a 15. There's kind of a little structure, I would say a little bit. 12s, you just, it's the Wild West. You have no idea what's going to go on in there. But yeah, so that's cool. And you mentioned you're learning the value of starting pitching and stuff. Have you this year especially, and we'll get deeper into it, but as you're competing, you said you're sixth overall as we talk now. Mm-hmm. How much have you really, really focused on each week in Fab focusing on statistics rather than maybe the next hot name per se?
I think in August, by the time I was on Rob's show, I really started paying attention a lot more to positions because one thing I wanted to mention too between Yahoo and NFBC is that in Yahoo, there's a player rater in the free agency page. So in NFBC, you just see the raw statistics and it's like, well, you can filter by homers or plate appearance, like at bats or hits, but at least with Yahoo, like they tell you, okay, who's actually been the best based on all the stats. So that's one thing that's challenging. So when I was doing Fab most of the year for all my teams, I'd kind of just look at plate appearances or at bats to sort of try to see who's playing a lot. And then I could look at the name and be, okay, I kind of know what this player's like, whether they steal, you know, hit for power or a good average hitter. But once I started looking at the overall more closely this last month, I was really targeting saves a lot. And steals, at least for the hitting side. The steals was the one hitting category where I had a lot of ground to make up in. And still trying to maintain focus on strikeouts and wins too at the same time because I could still gain ground in those categories. So it's basically been my Fab has been speed guys and kind of average too, or just as many good pitchers as possible just to make sure I'm not really throwing someone out who I don't really want to start, you know?
Yeah, no doubt about it. It makes a ton of sense in that one. You did two DCs. You did a satellite, an MEQ. All real quick, another thing you said earlier. So 2020, you qualified with an MEQ qualifier. Mm-hmm. And then last year, you had your rough year, like you said. It's almost like I hope I have the same success you're doing now because I won an OCQ last year. And I'm like thinking, oh, this is easy. Like, it's like a 12-team league. Like, what are we doing here? Like, I wanted like start to finish, like end to end. I was just in charge the whole time. Yeah, a little different when you go step up to the bit. Like it's you're learning. That's what I say. I'm learning all the time. It's crazy what we're doing. I'm in the league where the Guilds is first overall right now. He is just spanking us like ridiculously in that league. So it's an experience, but it's like you said, you got to get back like your mind back to you know, this is what got us here. Let's focus a little more. So we'll see how that one goes for sure. But this year, when did you draft your main event? Was it closer to the season starting? Did you have like a certain plan in place per se on when you planned on doing that draft? And I believe you did it online. So yeah. How did you go about that?
It was my last 15 team I drafted, and I made sure it was before my 12s because I think for me, it's easier going from 15 to 12 because it's
100%.
Yeah. So I focused it around my two Yahoo leagues. So it was the Monday before the season started. which was April 4th. And yeah, but like you said, it was online also.
And then I'm not as smart as you in Bloomfield, but I did go to college. And
I wondered if you were going to bring that up.
You had to have heard, like, I was laughing so hard at that. Like, it was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. You guys share an engineering background or jobs still, I believe. You guys went to school for it. And like, I know, like, I love Ryan's stuff because he can do things with computers and charts that are just ridiculous through that kind of stuff. And I'm assuming you have skills like that as well through your classes you've done. How has your engineering education helped you become maybe a better fantasy player? I think it's just interesting because we all live different lives, but then we all kind of come back to the same game. So there's ways that could help us out. So just out of curiosity, how does that make you a better player potentially?
Well, it's definitely helped my Excel skills. So I'm pretty good with Excel, which is very valuable when you have all these rankings and stats that you want to sort by and maybe mess around with. I've been able to apply some of the statistics that I learned with my prep, like with the projections to get like a holistic number. I know a lot of people use SGPs. I hear that thrown out a lot. I use Z-scores, which it's similar, I think, but you don't really – there's like one fewer step, I think, in getting to the SGP. You could, it's similar to like auction values. You're just getting one number where you can compare players to each other, you know? But yeah, it's definitely been valuable this. And also too, like working with a lot of data is something that we kind of learn how to do in school when you're an engineer. So it means right up my alley. So it's, I'm sure it's not a coincidence that I've been pretty successful with fantasy with my background in school, you know?
Yeah, no, that's why I wanted to ask you, because it's impressive watching what like you guys can do, you know, Phil Dussault and all of you guys with Brian Slack has an amazing spreadsheet he uses. Like, you guys just make me so jealous that, you know, I go out and play in the dirt during the day and then I come home and do this. It's like, I wish I could pull this kind of stuff off, but it's pretty awesome to watch. And I'm with you because, like, you know, SGP is a common term. It's very like standard gains points for those that don't know, but that's like a very popular thing. But yeah, there's the Z scores. Auction values work great. It's almost like there's definitely ways to go about it. Like, and it just kind of proves a point I like to make a lot, that there's many different ways to go about this. Like, just do what works for you. And obviously this is working for you, which is great. What kind of resources do you use to potentially build your Z scores? You don't have to give us all your secret recipes, but like, you know, some guys use like the, you know, the HQ Forecaster. They use like Steamer projections. They use all these different things. What do you use to get ready for the season?
Yeah, this one I have to give Toby some credit for. I take some of the projection systems off of FanGraphs, average those together. I look at that. I just take last year's actual stats from like Baseball Reference. And then I also look at, or I also download some of the FanGraphs pages for like advanced stats, or they have all different settings for like, one's called like dashboard pitching, advanced pitching, where I just pull out like swing strike rate or K minus walk percentage, things like that. And so I just kind of take out all the stats I think are the most important or most relevant. And I look at all those at different stages in my prep. So like I go position by position ranks first. And then once I finish all positions, I kind of merge them all into my overall list. And then once that's done, I just kind of tweak that as March and April go around. So
I love it. We'll get into your draft for your main event right now, where you, again, I'll keep saying it, sixth overall right now, which is like, I'm not saying it's impressive. It's absolutely amazing. Like I said, for a guy that started 2 years ago in the NFBC, like, you don't see this very often. So I think it's pretty darn cool. What was your game plan going into the draft? We'll see if you executed it. But, like, you know, Toby loves his pocket aces. You know, there's Dalton Del Don. Let's get the Yellow Brick Road going. There's some guys that won't draft a pitcher forever. What was your game plan? Like you said, you won a qualifier in 2020. You had a rough 2021 where you learned a lot. So you had to come in with a game plan for this. And what was your plan?
Yeah, definitely. So this was actually the first draft I've ever mapped out. My first, I think I went like, I wrote down like 20 rounds, but I think I really seriously went down 15 rounds of who I was targeting. And that really helped out a lot. And I got a bunch of the guys I was targeting, which was kind of impressive. But I think what also helped with that too was I was on the turn. I had the first pick, so I could kind of like just cherry pick who I wanted as long as they were still there. You know, I could just reach for guys because I had to. But I mentioned before how I was unsure about if my qualifier was going to fill. So it did fill. So I drafted for that. But then with the satellite, I drew the second pick. So I'm like, well, let me try something. So, and that one, I decided to go three hitters to start, which I hadn't done at all. I was trying to go more balanced this year. I did do pocket aces last year, but not the best success. Obviously, I said I didn't do too well last year. So I went with the three hitters in the satellite league. And then I went two pitchers. I was looking at it earlier. I actually ended up getting like five pitchers in a row after those first three picks in the satellite. But then when it came to the main, I'm like, hey, well, I liked how the team turned out. So I ended up deciding to do the three hitters again. And then I went two pitchers, which were at the four or five turn. So it's relatively early still. So having the first pick really helped out, and because it allowed me to get Trey Turner. And then when I came back in the second and third, there's still a lot of good hitters there. So I feel like it was just the perfect storm, really, of the strategy with where I was in the drafts. And without the satellite, I don't know if I would have tried this. I mean, I don't know if I would have wanted to try this one strategy that I hadn't done in the other four drafts. But once I saw how it looked, I'm like, okay, well, I think this could work if the right guys are there. So,
yeah, it's definitely an uneasy feeling going, okay, I practiced four times to do this other way, and now my biggest league of the year, I'm going to change things up. Like, that's one of those, like, oh no, like, that's a tough one. But yeah, no, it's good that you at least got to try it once before you did so, because obviously it's working out. A couple things you said there, and again, it's just really ironic that, and I could be totally wrong, but just like how you had your 2020, 2021 compared to my 2021 and 2022, and I've already like made lists of things I already want to start working on for next year. And one of them I flat out wrote down was, I want to map out my like first 15 rounds. That was like one thing. And then you did the same thing, because you look at like Jenny Butler has an amazing like flow chart she uses. Ryan Bloomfield, he taught me a few years ago the way he maps his thing out. I had Draft Cheat on the show earlier this year, and he sent me his sheet he was using while he drafted, because we started recording right after his main event draft, and he mapped out everything too. So there's a lot to be said about that. When you map out, what do you use? Do you use ADP? Do you use your rankings, someone else's rankings? How did you go about that?
Yeah, so I pulled – so one of the things I also downloaded, I didn't mention this either, was I created my player pool from NFBDC ADP. And then with that, I would take the main event min and max picks that came with the ADP, and I would filter by my picks. So I had like a target, which was like, okay, based on my rankings almost, who I really want ideally. Then I had a safe pick and then a fallback. And the safe was basically, I either filtered on the min or the max, I don't remember exactly, but I would go off the max pick. So if a player wasn't, his max pick wasn't where I was picking, then I didn't even consider them as my fallback. And then a min pick, I think if the min was higher than my pick, then I figured he would be safe. Or I may have had that backwards, but I was going off the min and the max pick for each player and seeing how it lined up with where I was picking.
I like it. I like it a lot. Last thing before we get into your actual picks here, you said you had the first overall pick. Was that your KDS number one choice? Did you want to be somewhere else? Because you heard different guys this draft season thinking, okay, I want to be like eighth or ninth, so I get a top pitcher, but a quick comeback. Guys wanted the top because you do get your Trey Turners, your Jose Ramirez's, stuff like that. Where were you trying to draft from?
This year I just went 1 through 15. Yeah. Wasn't this the case last year? I remember last year I had like a, I viewed it as a big, like a top five. So I think I may have done like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and then whatever afterwards. But I really just wanted Trey or Jose or one of those top guys ideally because of the homer and speed combination.
100% with you. I did the same thing as Matt Modica would just say, straight butter. So that's that's what I was going with as well. Let's get into your draft, and we'll probably go through the first 15 rounds or so and just kind of have some fun to see where things went. You obviously went Trey Turner. Not a lot of description needs to be made there. That was pretty simple. But you mentioned you got – and this is one of the good parts. We've talked about it on many shows about being at the front of the back so you can kind of – you get forced to reach to get to get your guys. And you went Teoscar and Jordan Alvarez technically in the third round, which is impressive in a 15-team league. What was your mindset on Teoscar and Jordan? I'm guessing Teoscar power, a little bit of speed, and Jordan all the power in the world.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah. So it's, I remember as I was sitting in the draft waiting, cause it was, I felt like forever, all these guys I wanted kept flying off. So I wanted Tim Anderson above those guys. I wanted Byron Buxton above those guys. I wanted Story ahead of those guys just cause I thought I got so saved. And then, I don't know if you, so you probably have the full board up right now, but yeah. Then there was a string of pitchers that went. So I'm like, mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So at least there's some hitters left. And so they were basically like the last two of who I had identified when I mapped out my first three rounds.
Yeah, it's not very often because you hear about it all the time. And most of the time, it's the truth is in these main events, it's usually like a bunch of yellow in the first round. Not so much in your league, which was a little different than normal. But you mentioned that second round, quite the run from picks about 8 through 13, give or take, 9 through 13. So that's a big spot there. But like I said, you got Teoscar and Jordan. And then came back to 4-5, and you mentioned that you went three hitters, two pitchers, like you practiced, and you got Max Fried and Charlie Morton. Like, Fried's been near Cy Young levels, depending on who you talk to. No Alcantara love, probably, but he's up there. And then Morton had his moments. And in a 15, and this is the difference, like, that some people can't wrap it around, is in a 15, Charlie was still very usable most of the season, where in a 12, he could be frustrating. But what was your mindset on this Fried-Morton situation?
Yeah, so Fried actually became one of my most rostered players. At some point after my first two DCs, I realized that he was a really good value where he was going, and I was able to get him again, so I was happy with that. I know he's not a big strikeout guy, but I, at that point with my first pitcher, I just wanted a good ERA and WHIP. I've struggled so much with ERA and WHIP. It's just the one thing I always really focus on when I try to select my pitchers. And Morton, he's been a mixed bag, like you said. The only other time I had him was in 2020 where he wasn't good. So I'm like, well, okay, he came back last year pretty good. And looking at his stats, yeah, like the ERA and WHIP's been rough, but he has a lot of strikeouts, which I needed at that point because I didn't have a starter yet. He was my second starter. So yeah, I think he has close to almost 200 this year if he didn't hit it. Mm-hmm. So that ended up being really valuable because with Fried, he's like less than a K per inning. One that I really wanted, but I think he went well before, was Verlander. I was in on Verlander too from the start. I thought him going around 100 was just kind of low. I mean, the Astros thought he was going to be fine, and sure enough, he might be the AL Cy Young winner. So I had like this group of guys that I was fine with, and more was like more of the fallback. Yep. But then looking back on it, I'm like, well, one guy I kind of got interested in as the season or the preseason went on was Manoa. And I've been thinking, okay, what would have been if I had Manoa instead of Morton? I would have had like a less, more than a run lower ERA, some more wins. But the one thing is I wouldn't have had as many strikeouts. So who knows, but I was relatively happy with those two.
Yeah. There's always a lot of what ifs. That's the fun of the game we play, but like even Kevin Gausman went a few picks after some other guys, but hey, it still didn't crush you by any means. I love the Fried pick. You mentioned he's a value. I'm guessing that's based on your Z score, where the ADP kind of went, is how you valued Fried in that regard.
Yeah, it's funny. I think they're a lot better when you look at hitting because the big starters, like they get inflated so much because, well, I mean, it shows you how valuable they are. Like Cole is I was going to give you an example, is like almost a 15 in my projections, or Trey Turner is like a 11 and a half. So with that, I mean, also you could question how I'm actually figuring it out, but I mean, you always see the on player raters that the SP one is a lot of the times the best overall player, which isn't surprising, but I'm not exactly sure where he fell in, but I just knew like after looking at his last couple seasons, like, well, I guess he's someone I should actually look at now, and worked out.
I was just curious. I love it too. I'm a big Max Fried fan. So fully on board with that. Going through round 6 and 7, I love these two picks. I was all in on Dalton Varsho for one. Mm-hmm. I was team Dalton out the gate, wrote too many articles on him in the preseason, and I drafted him everywhere I could. So that's a tremendous pick in my book, of course. But then you also got one of the, like, in every draft, like we knew Phil's year he won, you know, you got the Robbie Ray pick and the Rodons late and stuff. You have to, you know, get those guys that are drafted way too late, basically. Mm-hmm. And you got Shane McClanahan at the 6-7 turn at 7.1. That's out of, like, as we go through your draft, that's the first pick that stands out. Like, okay, this was a game changer for your team. So between with Varsho and McClanahan, where were you looking at on those two?
I think, Varsho was definitely a target. I was preferring a closer at this point. I wanted to get at least one early closer. But if you looked at my board, like, Knebel went in the 4th round, and he was someone I was planning on getting hopefully here, but it's the main event. So, like, everything gets pushed up like that. Taylor Rogers was gone too, so I couldn't even get him at this point. So I'm like, well, he was like the last guy in this tier of stars that I had, McClanahan. And I knew there's all these questions about, like, the exit velocity against him, but I mean, it's the Rays, and he had a lot of strikeouts last year. He looked promising. I didn't have him at all last year. I'm like, well, it's the main event. I feel like he's a good guy as a SP3 and a good high upside pick. So I don't think I really thought too hard on that pick. Once I saw he was there, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to take McClanahan now. So
yeah,
outstanding. Kind of fell into my lap.
Yeah, it worked out perfectly. Worked out really, really well. So you got three pitchers already, 4 hitters. You already got a catcher in Varsho, catcher outfielder, technically. So yeah, you got some fun there. And then coming around 8-9, shortstop that I absolutely love in Dansby Swanson. And then it's like, I love seeing this, not for you. You probably hated seeing this, but you took Jake McGee with your 9th pick. And you mentioned, you know, closers were tough to find. And when I'm looking at your board, yeah, they're flying. They're, like, by this time, not much out. Like, you could have got maybe a Gregory Soto a few picks later if you wanted to or something. But, you know, Robert Suarez went a few picks later. But that didn't work out either. What I like to see about this is it goes to show you that a draft pick that gets lost this early doesn't cost you your season if you grind on. So what was the mindset with Swanson, who I love, and he's obviously paying off this year. Mm-hmm. But then Jake McGee in the 9th round.
Yeah, I mean, just based on skill, I felt he was – better than Soto and Suarez. Well, Suarez was just completely like a dart throw at that point. And I'm looking at the board, and like, a closer didn't go for maybe 3 rounds. I think Bednar was the next one, and he's on the Pirates. And I didn't expect them to be too good, and they aren't, and not a lot of save opportunities. I mean, he's been a much better pitcher, obviously, than McGee. I didn't realize that at the time. I think he's just old now and doesn't have it anymore. But I fell for the Kapler, Kapler talk, but if we get to it eventually, I did back myself up, which helped me get to this point in the season. So I'm like, he was kind of like McClanahan, like one of the last guys left. And I'm like, well, I need someone at this point. So
yeah, I love it. And then at 10 and 11, like, this is beautiful too, because Willy Adames. So now you have Swanson and Adames. And it's funny that in a main event draft, because it seemed like for the longest time, obviously by looking at the board, Swanson got some steam closer to draft day, because like you said, he did it a few days before the season started. But for the longest time, it seemed like ADP wise, for the most part, Swanson and Adames were like right next to each other for most of draft season. It was like you picked one or the other, basically. Yeah. And like, I could even get lazy enough and go, okay, whichever one's left, I'm gonna take that one. That would be just like the philosophy. You got them both, and Adames has had one of the quietest awesome seasons out there, like 30 plus homers, just batting numbers a little suspect, but in this era it's not too bad. So you got Swanson, or I mean, you got Adames, and then Kiber Ruiz, who's kind of bummed us all out. But what's your thoughts on those two picks?
Yeah, well, Willie was another guy who fell, like you mentioned. I did not expect him to be there. And even when I took him, I was completely full at middle infield at that point because I had Turner, Swanson, and Adames. But I'm like, well, he's just too good for me to pass up at this point. So that worked out really well. And I didn't expect to take Ruiz either. I was pretty high on him, mainly because of the playing time. Mm-hmm. I at least now playing in 15s for a couple of years now, I cannot stand having a bad catcher too. It's like a dark hole in your lineup, and I didn't expect to take someone so early, but I had him higher than I think ADP, and then at this point he was kind of around maybe ADP, maybe a little early still, but I'm like, well, I expected a better average, so that's why I took him. But the one positive though, why I still had him, he stole some bases, so that kind of helped me out. And also with a lot of playing time kind of dragged my average down, but you can't get the ball right. So
no, But one thing that I've heard guilds talk about the other day too, and you're hitting on it, and this is how like successful players, it seems like, are doing things is, you know, we all go into a draft with a plan per se, and you deviated from it a little bit. Like, I'm not saying you still stuck to it, but like we said, Mo McClanahan fell to me, so I didn't think much about it. So yeah, boom. So maybe you weren't looking starting pitcher there, but you made it work. Adames, like, I didn't need another middle infielder, but here we are. Like, okay, well, now I got it taken care of because he's better than my other options. Like, Gil's talked about having Pete Alonso and then drafting Goldschmidt like three picks later. Like, most people wouldn't do that because they just get like tunnel vision on, I already got a first baseman, I'm going somewhere else. Where you were looking at the big picture with Adames going, okay, his talent level and his production is so good. Like, no, we'll figure the rest out later. And that's something that a lot of people, including myself, probably have a lot of trouble with. And you just got to think of you want the stat line at the end of the year, not the overall like positional raw stability, I guess, at the same time. So it's definitely an act of it's pretty impressive to see that kind of thing work out for you. The next two picks, Joe Ryan and Tommy Pham at 12 and 13. Those guys have been mixed bags. You've gotten some goods, you've gotten some bads. Not sure you still had them when they were good, but how was the Joe Ryan, Tommy Pham situation?
Actually, not too bad. I think my Joe Ryan ERA for my team is under 3, so I was able to pick his spots pretty well. I kept him the entire year. I didn't drop him at all. And yeah, Pham's been, he's been kind of slumping lately. I think he's been draining my batting average the last few weeks, but I've been leaving him in there because I need those steals. And of course, he hasn't really stolen either, but I was happy with those picks. I wouldn't say those. I would take those definitely as wins, even the Pham pick. But Joe Ryan was very – for a time there, I thought I was getting a little worried because he kept – I think when he came back from injury, he was kind of shaky. But he definitely fixed it, and he had a couple of good starts end of the year. So he was pretty good as my SP4.
Yeah, a very good SP4, especially in a 15. A really, really good one, and a guy that's going to be fun to dig into for 2023, because I think there's a lot to like there with him as he continues to develop. And then here we go again. Like, it's just – proof that you can make things work at 14-15, Dahlbeck and Soler, two guys that have massively disappointed this year, to the fact that they've been in the minor leagues or just DFA'd. You name it, they're gone, basically. So you were able to basically bounce out of those pretty well, it seems like. But at the time, you're looking for power, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I remember looking – so I took the positional targets, like the 8th percentiles from last year's main, and I remember by the time I was done, I was well over the homer projection, and my team ended up being really good in homers and RBIs and runs despite those two picks. But yeah, I was just I thought I had enough speed to be competitive, so I was just trying to hammer like these high up. I thought Soler was kind of undervalued where he was going. I mean, it turns out I was wrong, and even with Dahlbeck too.
Yeah, it made sense looking back on it though from the season he had last year and just overall production we've seen from him over his career, like. At that point, the draft in a 15-team league, that seems pretty good. Like, it really does.
And Soler was actually one of my most drafted players too, unfortunately.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. Yeah. So I pulled up 16 through 30 now, and now I see why you're doing so well. Because Ben hit on some quote-unquote values throughout the draft. And, you know, Steven Matson round 16 wasn't one of them, which stinks because he actually showed signs like whenever he was on the mound. Like, he actually had moments when he was out there. But here's your backup plan. And this is amazing to me because earlier in draft season, Camilo Duvall was like a top 10 round pick, if not higher. You got him at 17-1 because like you said, the Kapler talk had McGee in there and everything. So this came in a big, big way for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Him and McGee were my only two relievers for a while to start the season. So I was very happy with that, and we'll get to it in a minute, but I was going to actually take three. I should have taken three closers in a row, and I almost did. But the next pick, Luis Urias, kind of – I saw him there. I'm like, I know he's hurt, but I really wanted him. And going back to Matt's, I kept him the entire time he was hurt because I'm like, he's pitching in that terrible division. Cardinals defense is good. He had a decent year last year, and I just thought his upside was too good to let go. And I was able to keep that injured guy the entire season, well, most of the season, and this didn't really affect me, so I was very fortunate that it didn't. But it was kind of disappointing when he didn't really come back at all. But I know, like, Jeff Erickson talks about that all the time, like, keeping on holding on to guys for too long, and he was the one that I did that to.
Like, you always have room for, like, one. Yeah. It's like when it starts getting deeper now, it gets tough, and that's one of my biggest problems I have is when to drop guys, when, like, when to pull the trigger, and it's tough. And I don't know if there's any perfect formula, but sometimes it works really well. Sometimes you regret it completely. So that's the name of the game. At 18, 19, you went Luis Urias and Rowan Wick. You mentioned Urias. In 15s, it's much more important than 12. Were you liking Urias even more because of the positional flexibility?
Yeah, definitely. And I needed a third baseman too. And
third base, he was going dry up. So yeah.
Yeah, and he was going pre-injury a lot earlier than this. I'm like, well, they didn't say it was going to be long, and it wasn't long. I think he came back in April still. But it pushed me from getting David Robertson because I was going to double tap Robertson and Wick. I thought about it. I'm like, well, I'll go for the third baseman instead because I didn't know if Robertson was going to go that early. And, of course, he went before I was able to get back to pick 20. So that and the Morton pick are the two picks that I really wish I could have back. But Urias, he was pretty good for me while he was playing. And then I dropped him a while ago because Jace Peterson took over third base, it seemed like. So.
Yeah. And then, like, yeah, you picked Rowan Wick up just in case the Robertson thing didn't work out. And Wick got his moment, but probably after he was off your team, I'm assuming. And then in 2021, now here's like, this is, I'm starting to see names now. We're like, nah, yeah, these guys are probably starting in Ben's lineup at the like last 2-3 months of the season. Brandon Nimmo, who's been sneaky good this year. And then Rowdy Tellez, who people know by now, I'm a big Rowdy fan, and he's been a power source to get him in round 21. And you got one of my more favorite picks coming up. But Nimmo and Rowdy on this turn, that like makes up for the Dahlbeck and Soler pretty quickly.
Oh yeah, definitely. Rowdy, he's been great. I actually dropped him this past week because I didn't need homers or RBIs anymore, and his average was kind of draining mine. But he was very good for me all year. I had him on a few teams, and I was in on him last year too. So it was kind of disappointing when the Blue Jays didn't really play him that much. But I figured with Milwaukee this year, he'd get a lot more playing time, and they definitely played him. So, yeah, this is one of those picks where you have to have one of these, I think, to be near the top of the main event.
100%. Now there's another one coming up here. Hunter Green in round 22. You got Josh Harrison in 23. Now the question with Hunter Green, have you had him all season? How's that gone for you?
So I got better stats out of him than his season-long stats, kind of like with Joe Ryan.
Gotcha.
But I dropped him once he went on the IL. So seeing him do so well now has been really painful because I could have used those starts. And I missed that he was coming back, so I never added him back. Or I didn't know he was coming back until he's already gone. So, he was a mixed bag too. But with him, at least he gave me a lot of strikeouts, which I needed. I kind of mentioned that before. So, and I was able to kind of get rid of all the bats. I think his bench ERA for me was like – or his whip was 1.5. And on my team, it was 1.15. So it wasn't the worst experience, but it could have been better.
Yeah. You went pitcher, two guys have been very good, especially Miles Mikolas. In round 24, what he's put up this year, phenomenal for a 15-team league. And then Jose Suarez, I don't know if you've had him this late. I'm guessing probably not, but he's been very, very good as well.
Yeah, he was someone I drafted a lot too. I think he's on both my DCs, Suarez. And I knew a lot about him because, well, I remember he did well last year, kind of like he did this year at the end of the season. But I also play in a sim league, and he was on my sim league. I had traded for him during the offseason. And that's a really deep – that's helped me a lot, especially with NFBC, because that's like you're making a 40-man roster. So you're adding no-name relief pitchers and prospects. And Suarez is someone I traded for because I'm like, oh, he had pretty good numbers last year. And then I looked into him, like he had a decent K rate. Well, at this point in the draft, I thought he had good upside. But, yeah, he didn't really last on my team. And Michaelis, he's been great. The core start really – hurt. I wasn't good for 2 days after that until my pitcher pitched again because I didn't have another starter for till Thursday. That was a Monday game or something. It was a rough couple of days. It dropped me I forget how many spots in the overall, but I came back, but it was rough.
Yeah, no, that was quite the blow up that took place in Coors in that situation. A couple more to go here, and this might be my favorite value on your entire board. Like Mikolas is a very good value. There's no doubt about that. But getting Christian Walker in round 26, the last pick round 26, is amazing. I'm a Garrett Cooper stan. He's been up and down. He's been hurt so much this year. But Christian Walker in round 26 might be one of the best values you'll ever see in a 15-team league for what he's produced for you.
Oh, absolutely. And this is the only spot I drafted him all, at least in NFBC. It may have even been you talking about him, how he was having a good spring training. And I remember hearing that on a podcast. I'm like, okay, well, I was in on him maybe 2020 or 2021 after 2019, where all his underlying Statcast data looked great. And for whatever reason, didn't really happen last year. I'm like, well, at this point, why not? So So my corners were him, Rowdy, and then for a while it was Nate Lowe. So I had three first basemen starting for the longest time. I'm like, it doesn't matter though. They're all mashing. So he definitely helped me out a lot.
And then your last three picks, Bradley Zimmer, Dane Dunning, Brian Anderson. At least Dunning and Anderson for sure. They've all had some viability throughout the 15 teamer. But out of like, and this is one thing that's always funny. You don't have to give me a straight up number, just like a guess off the top of your head. Out of those 30 draft picks, how many of them are still in your active team?
Oh, definitely half, I think.
Okay, that's good. That's good. That shows you that you guess definitely got some big time production there, because you know they always talk about you know picks 21 through 30 are probably going to juggle around and this, that, and the other, and there's a lot of viability to that. But the teams that do very, very well, they avoid a lot of injuries, they get great values, and they just kind of stick with what works. So that's pretty good. Who was your biggest free agent acquisition this year? That produced for you, not that you spent on, your best production free agent.
Well, in terms of what my team needed, Josh Rojas.
Nice. He was a free agent.
Yeah, he was dropped in my main event.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I just couldn't imagine getting dropped in a 15. That's wild.
And the craziest part is he was my biggest. I think I spent more on him than I did Dustin May, but I almost doubled the runner up bid. I'm like, I was shocked at how much I could use the money afterwards probably, but I mean, I got him at least, but yeah, those 20 steals are almost 20 steals. That's exactly what I needed.
What category, like looking at your stats now, the way you drafted, is there anything you'd done different? Cause you're just like, maybe not as like, obviously closing was an issue, but the thing that this is the part about is what you sacrificed at closer, you benefited so much more for. And the more I look at it, because people talk about, you know, taking closers early and this, that, and the other, it's like a good closer, like a really good closer, you know, you got ratios, you got strikeouts, you got saves, but if you're not getting a really good closer, you're mainly getting saves and hoping not to get blown up in ratios, where you could be drafting like a four category bat. So like four stats to one type thing. So that's where I kind of starting to maybe change my tune a little bit. But what would you have done differently, I guess, which is hard to say when you're sixth overall.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw that Twitter thread the other day. It was about a week ago, I think. I forget which podcast it was, but it was about, I think it was one with Rob and there, no, it was the one with Rob, DiPietro, Phil Dussault. And I think it was the one that Toby was on too. And Steve Weimer, they were talking about closers and the wins. And, I wanted an early closer. It just didn't happen. But, looking at my point totals, everything except for K's is above 600 points. Okay. Wait, is that right? Yeah. So I have 600 points in the overall and everything but K's and saves. So it's mainly just saves is really where the only thing that and I guess strikeouts too. And that's one of the sacrifices with waiting on starting pitching, I guess, a little bit. Like I didn't get a Gerrit Cole or a Scherzer who's getting like ridiculous strikeout numbers. But yeah, it was really just the saves, I think, because I'm at 380, which is like almost middle of the road. And there were some weeks where I missed out on some saves on my bench, which really hurt. So, I mean, if I had those saves, I might be like fourth right now, maybe. But I don't know. Live and learn, I guess.
It's a good thing to have to live and learn from, let's put it that way. Yeah. I know you're smart with numbers and data, as we've talked about, so I'm pretty sure, just a guess, you've looked into this already. How high do you think you can finish mathematically? I'm guessing you've crunched numbers based on your situation. Like, what's like the – can you finish first, or is like, what's the highest you think you can finish?
No. I gave up first a while ago. My goal was third for a while because Scott and Bob were really high up. But now Steve's even ahead of it goes Steve, Scott, Steve. So I'm chasing second Steve right now. And
second Steve.
Oh, yeah, man. But I think fourth. So the problem is one thing that Rob DiPietro was great about, he gave me told me how to estimate how many points each stat was. So for me right now, based on where I'm sitting in the standings, a save is like 20 points in the overall. So for this week, I have four closers. So really, if I can get a save from each of them in the next few days, that's 80 points roughly. So I could go into fourth maybe. But I mean, I need Steve Weimer to not keep climbing. And Robert Mershak is in fifth ahead of me right now. So it's definitely not an exact science, but I have an I need some wins too. I think I have three guys going tonight, three starters, my last three starters of the year. So wins are like at least 10 points too.
Get those right strikeouts now. Too. Like
that's one thing. Yeah.
Get strikeouts and saves. Get those strikeouts, three starters, see what happens. Yep. That could be fun as well. Last thing I'll hit on here, because I could probably pick your brain for a while on different aspects of this. But, you're going to win some money, obviously. And you've kind of expanded. You did the satellites, the Qs, the DCs. Maybe you haven't thought about it yet. But what's your plans for 2023? Multiple main events? What's your plans?
Yeah, so right now my plan is to do 8 total again, probably 6 NFBC, 2 Yahoo maybe. And as it is now, I'm winning an Emmy qualifier. So
nice.
Yeah. So I think I'll do this year 3 DCs probably. I'll do the 3-pack, another Emmy qualifier for the next season, and probably 2 mains, I think, is what my plan is.
You only have
right
to pay
now.
For one of them. So yeah, you might as well.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet. Yeah. I love to hear it. Do you have any final thoughts on this 2022 season that you've had before we move on to some 2023 fun?
If you're someone like me who's a listener with Bench with Bubba, I mean, just give it a go and see. You never know. Like, I was nobody. I am nobody.
No, don't say that.
Yeah, no. But like, you hear all these guys doing the podcast, and if you think you're good, just give it a shot. You don't want to jump in the main event, but just do a qualifier like I did, and you never know.
Do the qualifiers, do the satellites. That's what I've always recommended. Like, if you just want to get your feet wet in the NFBC, they're cheaper formats than the big one, and you can learn at least the platform and that kind of stuff and go from there. And you don't have to worry about overalls. You're just playing in one league. It's a different animal to kind of get your feet wet and learn. Like, you talk about, you hear Rob's story all the time. His first year, he jumped like right into the main event, and he just got absolutely smoked. He's like, this was not what I was. And he's a great fantasy player. Like, and he's just like, I had no clue what I was doing. Like, it was just guys swimming, like literally a fish in like a shark's tank. So it's you learn a lot each year. You're always learning, but it's a ton of fun. And Ben's having a heck of a season. Let's just have some fun. Like I told you in the DMs and everything, I put some 2023 player debates out there. We don't have to go super deep if you don't want to. It's more just like, you know, everyone's already looking on the 2023. Technically, that starts in like a day. So I've held off this long. Let's have some fun and chat it up. And I use the Razzball player rater, but I also use like my discretion of knowing like, hey, just because this guy finished high in the player rater, he's still not going to get drafted that high. So let's like be realistic about the situation. But they're all hitters. They're all hitters. Freddie Freeman, who's hitting well over 300, powers down a bit, but he's having a great year. And they got Pete Alonso, who's just crushing baseballs as Pete Alonso does. Who would you take in 2023?
So I would definitely have Freddie Freeman ranked higher than Pete Alonso. But based on how I think I will be drafting, I would be more likely to take Pete Alonso. Well, Pete's going to get a boost definitely next year.
Yep.
I don't know. So maybe with that said, I'd probably go Freddie because of the average and maybe more speed, which is, I don't know. It's tough to tell, but they're very close, I think. I would probably lean Freeman, though, I think.
Yeah, that's why this one was right out the game. I guess it's interesting because back-to-back years now, my biggest flaw, and I keep trying to correct it, and I need to get better discipline in the draft room, basically, is power. I always leave a draft like deficient on power, which stinks because I always tell myself I can find power on the waiver wire. Like, no, you can find steals on the waiver wire a lot easier than you can find power, dummy. So, like these little things like that. And then batting averages drop so much, like a 300 hitter can, like, carry your team almost.
Right.
So it's where do you think you can draft, basically? Do you think you can take the average now and get power later? Do you want the power and just worry about average later? That's where it's fun. So I'm probably leaning Pete Alonso just for my own deficiencies that I have when I draft. But Freddie's, I don't see him being only like a 20 something home run guy again. I think he's going to be comfortable year 2 of the contract. I could see him hitting a lot more next year. So we'll see how that plays out too. 3 third basemans here. You got Manny Machado, great start to the year, just kind of doing his thing late in the year. Not a bad season though. You got Austin Riley, who's really scuffled like the last month or so, but still good season. And then Rafael Devers, it just seems like, at least in my mind, like I listen to a lot of shows, stuff doesn't get talked about as much as other third baseman, but still one of the top guys out there. So how would you go about those three, Machado, Riley, and Devers?
So I looked at my rankings for this past season when I was looking at these guys, and I had them Devers, Machado, Riley. And I think I would go right now Machado, Devers, Riley if we were drafting tomorrow. Mainly because of the extra steals that Manny gives you. I like to chip away at steals. And, I mean, he's almost – I think he's having a better year than Devers anyway. Devers, he's having a good year too. It's just that it's not as good as last year, so I think that's why he's not getting talked about. And I'm a fan of Riley. He's in my keeper league, and I had him in the first draft I drafted. And he's been great, but I guess the average now is dipping, which everyone was kind of worried about. And but other than that, he's great for power if you need power. So, I would go Machado, Devers, Riley, I think.
I am in line with you on that one. Pretty much everything you said, I want those steals with Machado basically is the difference, because I'm like you. That's why the Alonso pick's even harder for me, given he's actually run a little bit this year, a little bit.
Yeah, I saw that.
So it's like that kind of makes me feel a little better, but I hate, especially with my early picks, taking empty stolen bases. Like, I just hate it because you have so many of those later in the draft that it's like you need them early, or mm-hmm. then you feel like you get pigeonholed into something at some point in the draft. It's just never a good feeling. So I got Machado, Devers, Riley as well. This one's fun. I think it's going to be unanimous around most of baseball, but I think it deserves some more discussion throughout the offseason. Julio Rodriguez, who legit could be a 40-40 guy, like could be, versus Kyle Tucker, who is at least a 30-30 guy with maybe one day finds 40-40 potential. Both will be top first-round picks, potentially top 5-6 picks every draft. Where would you be going?
So I think of all the ones you sent me, this was probably the hardest one to pick between. Looking, I have their Statcast pulled up. I didn't realize Julio struck out like he did, but I mean, in terms of percentile, it's not very good, but I mean, it's only 26, which I guess is manageable now.
A lot of that was early too.
Right. And he hits the ball so hard. So he's kind of like a Tatis. I was getting those vibes looking at his page. This is a tough one. I think I would lean Julio mainly. If the Astros batted Tucker top three for once, I think maybe it's a better case for his favor. Like, he's a lot more red than Julio, but also Julio's 21. It's his first year, but I think Julio for the higher speed upside.
Yeah, this one's tricky. And I don't think you can give a wrong answer on most of these, especially this one. Like, if someone was like adamant on Kyle Tucker, I wouldn't argue with him. Like, mm-hmm. the argument I would give for Tucker is we've seen it for 2 years now, where J-Rod, we haven't. Like, we've seen it for one season, but it's been an amazing one season. Mm-hmm. So J-Rod's the fun toy. It's just the tough ones. It's one of those, like, the old joke, give me, like, the fourth pick so I don't have to make that decision. Like, let someone else make it for me. But I'm going to go Kyle Tucker. I'm going to go just because I don't like taking risks early. But J-Rod he's awesome, absolutely awesome. This one's interesting because they got drafted so far apart in drafts, but if you look at their stat lines, pretty similar. Randy Arozarena, who I have everywhere because I love Randy Arozarena, power speed machine, not the greatest batting average, versus Adelis Garcia, who's been a 2020 man as well. So a lot of similar production, different parts in the draft. Adelis should get pushed up a bit this year, but still probably a decent couple round difference between the two come ADP.
Yeah, probably. So was Randy picked in the draft that you guys were in?
Let me pull that up right now. I got that right.
Because I remember everyone saying, or not everyone, but
at least did not get drafted.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Randy got picked in round 5 by me. Okay. Round four by me. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So I was looking at their page. They're both definitely risky. It's Randy's page looks like it did last year where everyone was out on him again. So, I mean, maybe he's someone who can just like outperform his expected stats. And also he's younger. I want to lean Adelis, I think. But I could see that they're both so risky.
Yeah. This is why drafting early, like already looking at my picks, it's like, I could have waited to go Adelis instead of Randy. And I love Randy. I do, but it's like, to me, they are very similar players looking at their profiles now and their production. So I'd probably go Adelis as well, just to save the money on him, or draft capital, as they say. But I like them both quite a bit. I think Randy gets undeserved shade, as the kids may say. I don't even know if that's a thing anymore. But that's one I would not give. Let's talk. I do have pitchers. I have one closer one, because Edwin Diaz has been obviously outstanding. Gets the trumpet treatment and everything. But then you also got Emmanuel Clase, who's been a monster as well. And he's not talked about nearly as much. He still is, but not as much as Diaz. So we know relievers will get pushed up. We might not both take this guy, but out of these two, who would you rather take if you're going early?
I think Diaz because of the strikeouts. I mean, it's basically the only factor between the two, I think.
Yeah, and because it's so hard to like say, like, oh, they're still going to get you 40 saves. You never know what these teams are going to do. Right. Like, you're drafting for ratios and strikeouts at that point and praying that they get saves. That's what it is. Right. So, yeah, I know. Good. I can definitely agree with that one. This one is interesting to me just for the fact that Michael Harris II is getting Healy. I mean, I think it was round four. I got it right here. Michael, yeah, round four to Ryan Roof in our early draft. And then you got Starling Marte, who went in middle of round three. So they're about a round apart. Starling Marte, the veteran, been hurt towards the end of the season, but he's got, you know, a little bit of power, lots of speed. You got Michael Harris, power, speed, lots to like there. Would you rather go with the veteran or the youngster that's maybe up and coming that might be like a first round pick next year or the following year if he keeps doing this?
I think I lean Harris on this one, mainly because Marte's age and history, or injury history, I would say. Well, now that I think about this, I need to rethink my Tucker versus Julio Rodriguez pick, because I would be kind of hesitant to draft Harris probably where he's going to go, just because I'm not one for – he won't be a rookie next year, but like he'll still be a young player, so who knows like if he'll have a sophomore slump or anything like that. I wasn't in on Marte this year, so I won't be in on him next year, so I definitely pick Harris over Marte next year.
I'm with you too. I was very, very anti-Marte this last year, and I will be anti again because guy's a good ball player in real life. But if you really dig into his numbers outside of like one really, really good season, he's not, his draft price is a little crazy for me. Right. So I'm with you on the Harris call as well. My boy Reese's pieces, Reese Hoskins versus Matt Olson, also went at the end of round four in our draft. I took Hoskins in round six. The reason I mentioned them both, you know, mediocre batting averages, both with tons of power. Like Olson, we're seeing the kind of reverting back a bit to what we saw in the past. Still a very good ball player, but not the guy with the high average. Would you rather get Olson or Hoskins?
This is another one of those cases where I think I'd have Olson ranked higher, but I would probably be more likely to draft Hoskins.
Yeah, I like it. A couple more. This one will be fun because Juan Soto's having a rough season, which stinks because he's still a monster and would not be shocked if he's like an MVP candidate next year. That's who Juan Soto is. But he went 10th overall. Bryce Harper went 11th overall in our draft. Would you go Juan Soto or Bryce Harper?
So going back to this year's how I had it, I think I had Soto 4, Bryce 5. And I don't see a lot to change that being that close right now, looking at their stat cast. I have Harper on a team now. I don't have Soto on any teams. This one's tough. My head says Harper, I think. Not because of how Soto's played this year. I think he'll bounce back, but I feel like Harper has more power and he has more speed potential than Soto. Soto's a better hitter, but he's more of a OPS guy than, I mean, Harper has a great OPS too, but in terms of fantasy, I think Harper is more likely to give you higher homer and steal numbers. So with a lower average, but he walks a lot, so it won't really affect you as much. So I would probably go Harper, I think.
Yeah, I'm leaning Harper as well, which I never thought I would do because I've been Team Juan for a long time. But
He was Juan Soto at one point before Juan Soto was Juan Soto.
That is very true. That is a great, great point there. So, yeah, I'm leaning Harper as well. I think we got something there. And the last one I had down here, Carlos Correa versus Dansby Swanson. That was before I looked at your board where I saw you got Dansby, so I know your team, Dansby. I know where I stand on this one. But in our draft we had already, Dansby went in round six. Correa not drafted yet. So – where would you go between the two? And you can't go to like a Gucci store or wherever Correa wants to go. So you're out. The Dior. He wants to go to the Dior store. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is my easiest one, and it was Dansby, not even close.
Yeah. No, I'm with you too. Like that's why I was trying to make one for like the late shortstops. I'm like, they all kind of like, to me, they all stand out to be pretty obvious. Like you either team this guy or team not. That's what it felt like. And so it was kind of rough. But yeah, let me just find one just fun one here. Looking at the I'll give you one, the SP streamer, Michael Simeon. He tweeted out a poll. It's got almost 800 plus responses. It's 52-48 right now. Would you draft Aaron Nola or Spencer Strider with your first starting pitcher pick?
I saw that and I voted Nola.
So did I. Mm-hmm. What was your reasoning though?
So I was looking at Strider after hearing about him a lot lately, and I saw he only has two pitches really. He has a high walk rate and it's first year really pitching a lot. So I don't know. Nola has not been bad at all. And I know like Strider's a new shiny new toy. So I'd rather just go a little safer with a pick that early for a pitcher. And Nola is that. So
100%.
It was really hard for me to decide. Like, I saw the two. I'm like, well, this is Nola.
The way I would do it is like the DFS mindset and everything. It's almost like overall, I could see an argument for Strider if you're in an overall competition. I could see it just because he's got that ceiling. But I was team Nola as well, just because we've seen the consistency year after year. He just puts up like a low three ERA, gets you all the strikeouts. It's like, that's just, he's good. Like, we know, you know what you're getting with him, which I like. And one thing is the strikeouts, like we've talked about. He's going to get them for you. So I'll take my chances there. Like, Strider has been awesome. But like, to get a year of 132 innings and 200 plus Ks again, going to be tricky. Going to be very tricky. That's an elite performance. So we'll have to see how that pans out.
He's hurt now, too. So.
Yeah, he's hurt now. Yeah, the oblique injury. Let's see what he does in the postseason. That'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But all right, Ben, we'll wrap it up right there. Any final thoughts on the 2022 season? Anything for the listeners out there for your amazing run you've had?
No, thanks everyone for tuning in. Don't really come looking to my Twitter. I don't really tweet much. I'm more of a replier than anything. So maybe you'll see me pop up there. But it's just, I listened all year. It's been great to be on. I'm honored. So thank you for this. And hopefully we'll do it again sometime.
We will. I'll get you on this off season for sure. We'll do some more 2023 talk once we kind of really dig in and see what's going on, get some real ADP out there and maybe work on our rankings or whatever to get an idea for it. Again, don't get out your secret recipe or anything, but we'll do all that fun stuff. But again, thanks for joining me. I really enjoyed it and we will do it again sometime.
All right. Sounds good, Bubba. Thanks.
Everybody check him out on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. Ben Tidd, everybody. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 511. Catch you guys next time.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.